Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Saturday morning Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on June 23, 2018. My Dhamma talk and our Sangha discussion is on the Sariputta Sutta and the cessation of ignorance. In this sutta, Sariputta is questioned by Ananda, the Buddha's cousin and attendant. Ananda is confused about a fundamental aspect of the Dhamma. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. On one occasion, Venerable Ananda visited the Venerable Sariputta. They exchanged courteous greetings, and Ananda took a seat next to his friend. Ananda asked a question, "Dear friend, could one develop concentration to the point that they would not be sensitive that they would not be perceptive to the earth." So an easier word to understand is just sensitive. So that they would not be sensitive to the earth or the elements of the earth, meaning you'd lose your reference. Could one develop concentration to the point that they would not be sensitive to the infinitude of space or of consciousness? Those were common questions at the time that spiritual practice, the goal is to understand the infinitude of space. And then remember the teachings, mm-hmm. The Buddha said those are just disregard those. Those are distractions to the goal. Could one develop concentration to the point that they would not be sensitive to nothingness or of neither perception nor non-perception? Again, those common teachings of the time still around today, rooted in the Vedas. Could one develop concentration to the point that they would not be sensitive to this world or the next world? Would this one still be sensitive to what is occurring? So all those questions that Ananda is asking now, he's heard from the Buddha and other people around them that those questions themselves are rooted in ignorance. Let go of the questions and let go of the need to understand the infinitude of space or the this world or the next world. Remember the question that was often put from Vajragoda, Anuruddha, etc., Malankyaputta, basically, what happens to me? Where did I come from and where am I going? What about my past lives? What about my future life? That's a question. It says, how do I establish myself in the past so that I can continue to establish myself in the future? Mm-hmm. Look at where your mind is. Mm-hmm. It's nowhere near what's occurring. Mm-hmm. So the Buddha said, let go of those views. He didn't say that there's no such experience. But objectifying yourself to the past or the future, you're missing out here. Your mind is not united in your body. Let go of the questions. He repeatedly said to Vajragoda and others, it's your questions that's confusing you. Let go of the question. Oftentimes he would just sit silently to not feed that ignorance that is causing that question. A self-referential ego self insists on an answer to every question that it can come up with. Why? Because it's establishing itself in those questions, or it wouldn't have the question in the first place. And this gets into that, I won't get too deep into it, but it gets into that whole overemphasis that's put on past lives. The Buddha never said there's no such thing as past lives. He just said they're completely unimportant as far as the Dhamma is concerned. They're just a distraction. That's the basis for Ananda's questions. He understands that these are foolish questions and concepts, but what happens when I let go of all of them? Sariputta answers, yes, dear friend Ananda, even with great concentration, this one could be sensitive to what is occurring, the whole point of the Dhamma. The whole essence of the Buddha's mindfulness is to be mindful of life as life occurs within the right frame of reference, right view. Ananda says to Sariputta, please explain how one could develop concentration so that they would not be sensitive to the earth or to this world or the next world and still be sensitive to what is occurring. A simple way of asking that question is, please explain how I can be sensitive when I let go of all my views.
Can you read his question again?
Sure. It really is the fundamental question that we're all asking, isn't it? Or that we might be asking as resistance to what we're learning. Ananda asks, please explain how one could develop concentration so that they would not be sensitive to earth or to this world or the next world. And reference to the earth is really reference to the exterior world, what's occurring. It's not so much the physical universe. It's my clinging to the worldly events.
Yes.
Let me go back. Please explain how one could develop concentration, so that they would not be sensitive to worldly events or to this world or the next world, and still be sensitive to what is occurring. Again, can't understand how you could lose the self-reference and still be sensitive to the world. Sariputta says, let me explain. On one occasion, I was here in Savatthi at the blind man's grove. I developed concentration to the point that I was neither sensitive to the worldly events or to this world or the next world, and yet I continued to be sensitive to what is occurring. He's describing his awakening process, which happened really within a week of meeting the Buddha. Please tell me, dear friend Sariputta, what were you sensitive to at that time? What a great question. If you're no longer referencing the world around you, what are you referencing? What are you sensitive to? The answer gets right to the heart of the matter. Sariputta has now withdrawn his self-referential, outwardly focused, objective views, and he's now, as the Buddha described, he's rightly self-awakened and his focus is right within. Ananda, I was sensitive to the cessation of becoming further ignorant of Four Noble Truths. I was sensitive to unbinding from views ignorant of Four Noble Truths. He's describing the entire process of awakening. And saying that he's sensitive to it in this context is telling Ananda, all those things are unimportant. What's important is developing the Dhamma, and know that you're developing the Dhamma. That is Sariputta saying, I have now become sensitive to developing the Dhamma and understanding what I should hold on to and what I should let go of. I was sensitive of the arising and passing away of all phenomena. Remember Kandana when he first heard the Dhamma. All conditioned things that arise are subject to cessation. Sariputta is saying the same thing. I understand the impermanence of all things. I'm sensitive to it. That's an awakened mind. And if you truly understand the impermanent nature of all things, you'll cease hanging on to anything. Lao Tzu said that. Once you understand the impermanence of all things, you'll let go of everything. Buddha said that continually throughout his teaching career. Just as a wood fire's flames arise and pass away, I was sensitive of unbinding from wrong views. Sensitive meaning I know it's occurred. That's the end of the sutta. Pretty good sutta, huh? Yeah. Thank you. It's a remarkable sutta in so many ways, isn't it? Because it gets right to the heart of the matter of almost anyone that begins to take up a Dhamma practice and comes up against that fear of annihilation. What's going to happen to me? It's such a common, I think I've heard that from just about everyone that's ever come here and stayed with it. Some people don't stay long enough to even formulate the question, but it's that underlying question that I think that drives people from continuing. We talked a little bit about this earlier too. We just cannot imagine letting go of all these views, because these are the views I've used to establish myself. What's going to become of me? And it's really just a fear of the unknown, because this is all we know. The other important thing to take from this sutta is the reference to those questions that are to be recognized as simple distractions. So notice Sariputta didn't describe to Ananda, I know what happens in this world and the next world. He very well may. The Buddha did. Next Tuesday, there's going to be a talk on the Simsapa Sutta, the handful of leaves, where the Buddha uses the metaphor of holding a handful of leaves. What more represents my knowledge? All the leaves in the tree or the leaves that I'm holding in my hand? Of course, they said all the leaves in the trees, but the Buddha says, well, I don't teach all that. I don't teach everything that I know, because it doesn't lead to the goal. I only teach what is in the palm of my hand. I only teach the Dhamma. Sariputta is saying the same thing. It's not that there's no answers to those questions. The answers are a distraction, chasing after those answers. Let go of that search. Let go of the search for God, meaning understanding where I came from and where I'm going. Let go of those great existential questions and deal with the matter at hand, your own ignorance of the way things really are. Because then, from a common peaceful mind, you will find that those questions are irrelevant because I don't need to establish myself anywhere else except right here. And then as life unfolds, you're at peace with it.
Which is, can I just ask a question?
Sure.
I can't seem to differentiate. Well, I understand what the Buddha's meaning as far as the Dharma is concerned. To ask those questions is irrelevant to the Dharma. You're missing the point when you're looking outside, you know, away from looking to things, and not sort of giving up your own views, that which is more of the Dharma. But having said that, we do so much of that in life because we have to learn.
Yeah.
And when you are learning a topic or a subject, or you just need to, the world is just changing, and you need to keep up and you need to learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to differentiate and take yourself out of learning, wanting to learn a subject, when you are wanting to learn a subject because you think you need to know a subject in the world, and yet not get yourself caught up in the learning.
Yeah.
I have trouble with that. I don't know where the one boundary stops and the next one starts.
It's another important and fundamental question, isn't it? There, from an awakened point of view, there is no boundary. There's nothing, I don't even like to use these words, but there's nothing wrong or even contradictory to the Dhamma to learn things, learn about the world, learn about the universe. But when that learning is taken from the point of view of right view, there's no stress involved, and there's no introduction of wrong views into what you're learning. So while you're thinking about some great teachers like Einstein, Einstein said that the only worthwhile religion, even though he used a word, but he was referring to the teachings of the Buddha, the only worthwhile religion is Buddhism. So he must have understood it, but it didn't stop him from pondering great questions and answering those questions. But even if you look at, these are probably caricatures that we have of Einstein, but you look at some, when you look at it, this was a completely self-effacing genius, wasn't it? Another one just died the other day. I think it was a remarkable man. I didn't believe in. Completely self-effacing, wasn't he? But yet, he pondered the great questions. There's nothing wrong with pondering the great questions or even looking to learn something about them, the nature of the world we live in. There's nothing wrong with being a quantum physicist. But you would be a much more effective quantum physicist, I think, if you were rightly self-awakened at the same time. And you can do both of those. Or you can learn calligraphy and still be awakened. You can learn how to play canasta. I'm just using mundane things now. There's nothing wrong with anything that we might do in the world. But we'll be much more present with what we're doing if we have first developed the Dhamma. Because then what we're learning doesn't have to be any different. Again, we won't bring our views into that. We'll learn something clearly, free of wrong views.
It's your views.
Yeah.
Bringing your views into it.
And that's true about no matter anything we do. We live in a world that is rich with experience. We minimize that experience by trying to make it fit into wrong views.
That's right.
Yes. And so from an awakened point of view, every single moment of life is meaningful. Why? Because I'm present for it. That's it. That's what Sariputta is saying. He's not referencing anything other than I am now free of ignorance.
When you have a moment or a few minutes of being in right view, you realize that it's just taking yourself out of the picture.
Yeah.
I mean, you can just look at something and not all, you know, not immediately put yourself, oh, I like that, I don't like that, I wish that wasn't there, now I have to go out there and do that, and I don't want, it's just like you can just look at it and just be okay with it.
Yeah.
You can be okay with it, and you can say, well, I'm going to have to, I mean, just stupid things that you do every minute of the day.
Yeah.
You can just say, well, I'm going to have to separate those iris pretty soon because they're getting crowded. But it doesn't shoot an arrow in your chest.
Yes, yeah.
It's just a slightly tilted view.
From wrong view to right view. Yeah.
And it's so much more pleasant. I mean, you know, I realize that that's just, you know, that's, it just happened a couple of times, and it's just, you know, then you go back to that other self or that other way of, you know, you just have to keep working at it.
Yeah.
Or even more important, is when somebody says something to you, your husband says something that just, you know, and you just put yourself right in it, and immediately you're just like, hey. And it's hard, I think it's harder to, that's when you have to just, you know, do your deep breath. And,
yeah.
But it happens, so the arrow hits, but then there's sometimes when it doesn't now. You know, you can.
Isn't that remarkable? Yeah, the more personal situations are, the more difficult it is. But
yes.
But you're describing even understanding it there. When we let go of self-reference, there's just a self-referencing what's occurring. At peace, no, nothing needs to be any different.
It's not like you lose your ability to perceive everything.
No,
you don't. There's that saying.
But that's why I like that sutta, because it's just, it's like right. It seems like an absurd question that Anand is asking, like, if I continue to meditate and increase my concentration, am I gonna
disappear?
Not be able to perceive things. Well, of course not. That's ridiculous. But that's what your Anatta, those are questions that it asks.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because from the point of view of wrong view,
right,
that way of thinking can't imagine any other view.
Right.
Right.
And again, so there, you want to talk about a narrow way of living your life, maintain your wrong views.
Right.
Because all you can experience, no matter what occurs, a beautiful sunset might occur, but you'll see it in a way that judges it in some way. Like
uh-huh.
you wanted it to be long. Well, it was only 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, I had that experience. I won't tell the story. I tell it often of my, I'm getting into the story.
Yeah.
I've had plenty of those experiences where something happened. We all do. Something happened that was wonderful, and we diminished it by wanting more of it rather than just be present with what is occurring.
Mm-hmm.
But that type of experience can happen in each moment of our life. Each moment of our life can be meaningful simply because it's what's occurring in our life. We think that if we, the implication before we understand it, that we're going to become lumps on a log, an old expression. But the opposite is true. We the only way, the way to have the most vibrant, meaningful life, is to let go of life the need for life to be any different than it is. It just makes sense. Again, a human being first awakened 2,600 years ago and lived the most vibrant. You hear the stories about the Buddha, how deeply involved he was in his life as his life occurred and the lives of everyone else around him. What a meaningful life he had, both for himself and for others, because he let go of all self-referential views. But there was a self there going on, wasn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the key. That's the answer to that whole problem. But people can't understand it. It's one of the reasons why there's been so many adaptations and accommodations made to even an awakened human being's teachings, because we need it to be more.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at all the adaptations, accommodations, and embellishments that have been made to this simple Dhamma, it's all for that reason, to continue eye-making, rather than to recognize and abandon I'm making. That's just human nature. It's not, that's not right or wrong either. It's just what occurs. What a remarkable simple sutta. And any other, I think we've gone around the room, right?
I like how Sariputta answers Ananda's question rather than saying your questions are what's confusing you. Because that is, that demonstrates sort of the middle way of teaching and meeting Ananda where he is. And like, because that's what I was thinking when I was first hearing it, was like, oh, this, the questions are, you have to let go of the questions, but sometimes that's not possible.
Yeah.
And also not, I mean, answering that question was also skillful.
Yeah.
The way that Sariputta answered it and said, well, I was perceiving, I don't remember the words, but basically the way I understood it was, well, I was perceiving what was occurring.
Yeah, I was sensitive
to
what's occurring.
Right, and in that moment. So it wasn't like I was, and so if whatever was occurring is what I was sensitive to.
Yeah. Notice too that Ananda wasn't asking what happens in the, to me in this world or the next world. He was talking about what happens when I let go of those views about it. So it wasn't a direct question.
Right.
When Vachagoda asked the Buddha, it was, I want you to tell me what happens to me.
Okay.
And so again, it's so important to understand the situation. In that situation, the appropriate answer was, that question is what's confusing you. And then he taught an appropriate view. So, and also Ananda has, Sariputta understood that Ananda has a basic understanding.
Right.
Sariputta was known very quickly as one of the great teachers of the Dhamma, because he had the ability, like the Buddha did, to understand the question and the appropriate way to answer it, as opposed to, say, Mahakasapa, who was another great monk, but who only taught situationally. In fact, he only taught when the Buddha asked him directly to teach something, because he knew that Kasapa had certain skills that would result in that.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it was great sutta, but a great class.
Yeah, great class.
Has everybody, I think you did the you're using the app?
I've got it down on my smartphone, but not my iPad.
You haven't tried to, or you?
I have tried to. I've done exactly the thing on my iPad with a little square with the arrow. The arrow. Scroll along to the three dots. Select.
Add to home screen.
Add to home screen. That's it. It lit up. That's it, right? Press the.
Yeah, you should have an icon on your home screen.
Yeah, it's not doing it.
How about you, Ron?
I haven't tried it.
On my iPhone, but not my iPad.
But I can just go into the website. But I haven't been able to I don't even think I would know where to go to download the app.
Oh, what browser do you use?
Chrome.
In the top right-hand corner, there's three dots on top of each other. Click on that, and you'll see somewhere in the drop-down menu, Add to Home Screen. Click on that.
You might have to then give it
permission to actually put it on the home screen, and then you'll have an app.
Okay.
And the real benefit of it is that you'll have instant access, and it's very quick to the website rather than going into your browser again.
So you just
you made a shortcut.
The app just takes
basically.
You
basically.
Right, it's like it just takes you right to the site. Website.
Okay.
Yes, and
okay.
And it's through, when you access it through the app, it's almost always much quicker too. And there's technology behind that.
Okay.
You're eliminating some of the interference between a browser and the website. Again, without getting too technical about it, it's more of a direct access. So, if you still have trouble, let me know.
Because
I did it. I put it on my. I don't like use my iPad often still, but I was able to put it on there with no trouble. So something's missing.
Can I just say something about last Tuesday's class?
Yes.
We concentrated on the Eightfold Path. I've always, it's hard to explain, but the Eightfold Path is like the teachings of the Buddha, like Christianity has the
Ten Commandments,
and you know, there's all sort of like instructions, if you will. And I've always thought of the Eightfold Path as the instructions that the Buddha left for us.
Mm-hmm.
After the Tuesday's class, I see it more as the instructions for me, rather than for the big understanding of Buddhism, we don't like that word, to go along with the big understanding of, you know, what the Buddha taught.
Yeah.
I don't see it that way now. I see it more as a personal instruction. But I've always known it is. I've always known that's what it's there for. It's there for a guidance for me. I've always known that, but I see it more as a personal instruction from the Buddha for me,
just
for me.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. It's to be experienced personally. These aren't commandments.
No.
The obvious difference between the Ten Commandments and the Eightfold Path is that the Eightfold Path is a path to free yourself of the need for the things that the Ten Commandments is warning us against. So the Ten Commandments are don't do this, don't do that,
mm-hmm.
don't do this,
mm-hmm.
but there's no underlying instruction on how not to do that.
Right.
The Buddha recognized, be careful, that, I'm going to say it the way I say it, the Buddha recognized the futility of saying just be good. Because he understood the underlying cause of bad. It was wrong thinking. So there's nothing to say, I remember that. You better not covet the Lord's name in vain. Is that one of them? I think it is. I think it's
take
the first one.
Unless
you understand why you're doing that. Or to, you know, like, don't go around coveting other people's wives. Well, that's good instruction, isn't it? But if you're caught up in that type of behavior, how are you going to change it? Somebody saying no isn't going to do it for most people. And thankfully, there's an app because I'm going to get into that. So again, it's not describing how you must act in the world. It's describing why you don't act the way you want to act in the world, and then it gives you a path to change that. And it's a personal experience. It has to be personal experience, doesn't it? Doesn't that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
How could it be anything else? I know from the day I was born, people told me I had to do something. Man, I'm gonna. It's lucky somebody didn't come along and tell me you better breathe because I'll hold my breath till I die, just to prove how right I am. And I can think of, you know, we can all think of those kind of things that we, because we want to keep establishing yourself, even no matter how good the or how rational the teaching might be or the suggestion, we don't accept it because we take it personally. Again, this is a personal experience of awakening, and it can only be that way, as Sariputta described here. Pardon me?
I see it more that way now.
Yeah. But it's taken a little while to develop that that clear view. Again, that's the point. It's the difficulty in the Dhamma, but that's why right effort is part of the Eightfold Path too. It's a reminder that we have to continue our persevering effort. If not, we're going to fall back in wrong views that justify saying, this is a lot of hogwash. Or it might just be, it's just too hard for me. I can't do it. I can't meditate for an hour or whatever it might be. You know? It works. It's a very gentle path that anybody, any human being that is sincere about awakening can become rightly self-awakened. That's what the teachings are. What a great class. we'll finish as we always do with metta. So again, find your relaxed meditation posture. Gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And again, take a moment to become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath. And these are the Buddha's words on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class this morning. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.